Hey guys, this is CTP with Barbell Shrug. For the video version of all these podcasts, go to our website, fitter.tv. That's FITR.TV. Check out the video version of all of them. They're a lot cooler. They're super juicy and tasty.
Are we opening with a story about your pants?
Can you see my nuts?
I can see your nut. At least one of them.
Can you see my nuts? Can you see my nuts? Can you see my nuts?
Can we get like a big like zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out of Mike's nuts like to open the show?
Totally uncomfortable.
Nice pants.
I watched, that reminds me of Inception from South Park. See that episode? Inception?
Based on Inception? Stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember that one.
That was really good.
Did you watch the Tea Party one yet?
Which one?
The South Park. No, sorry. The Family Guy. Family Guy.
I didn't watch the Tea Party episode.
I think you would just eat that episode up.
It's probably. I don't know. I'll have to watch it and see. All right. We're here. This is Barbell Shrug, Strength and Conditioning Podcast. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with the other hosts, Doug Larson.
You bet.
Chris Moore.
Yo.
We have our guest, Vaughn Rawls.
Hi.
Ultra Marathoner.
It sounds very fancy, doesn't it?
It does
sound.
Some people run marathons. I run ultra marathons,
which means
is like a normal marathon, just so much harder. I don't even want to talk to you if you run just marathons.
I also prefer endurance athlete.
Endurance athlete. Okay.
But not like the Lance Armstrong kind.
I'm clean, man.
You saying Lance Armstrong's not clean, bro? Are you saying he's guilty? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying I don't care.
Oh, okay.
I've been getting some interesting feedback in regard to the podcast that we did with Dr. Andy Galpin. I think that was number 19. The one I wasn't here for. I've been getting a lot of questions about the references to the leg power studies he's talking about and in regard to heart health. So if you want to see those references, go to fitter.tv, click on Barbell Shrug. Click on that specific blog post, and in the comments, I posted the references. So I've had a lot of people going, you know, that sounds really interesting, but where are the references? So they're posted down there for you to see. So
lest you think we were just making shit up on this podcast, the answer is no. We have references for what we're talking about.
I realize a lot of people are watching this on YouTube or listening to it on iTunes, so they may not be visiting the website and getting all the information. So go there to make sure you're getting all the information. Make sure to check out the shop. See the seminars that are popping up. Chris Moore's Simple Strength. Quite a few people have bought those, and we've gotten some really positive feedback. We got one from the UK and one from New Zealand. So worldwide.
Global. Global harmonization.
Americans better start buying it up, or those New Zealanders will pass us up. They're going to be
stronger. They'll be winning all the golds in the Olympics.
All right, so Vaughn, let's introduce you a little bit. Okay. Your story. You did not start off training as an endurance athlete. You started training just to be more hardcore.
I started as a fat guy.
You want to make like a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
And then you came and visited us, and then kind of tell people like about your journey a little bit.
I started, I was probably 200 pounds, maybe a little more, really fat, and just got tired of that whole situation, and luckily found the perfect gym.
Sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah, exactly. And started training CrossFit Memphis in the old location. And then I lost all my weight, and I got down to like 170 pounds.
Where'd you start at?
200, 205, something like that. And like all
How long
fat,
did that take? Drop 35 pounds like that?
Probably 4 or 5 months.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was that fast.
It was fast. I've only been doing this for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I've known you guys 3 years. So.
Okay.
In October, actually. October the 16th was my first workout at CrossFit Memphis in 2009.
Okay. Vaughn is a great example of a compliant client. Mm-hmm. So someone who comes in and says, what should I do? And I tell him what to do, and he does it, and he gets excellent results. I find that most people who don't get the best results in the world is because they're not very compliant. They're not like checking in every week and going, what do I do next? The clients right. come back every week and go, what should I do next? I'm doing this. What should I do next? And I keep telling them next step, and they just kill it. So compliance might have something to do with it.
Well, I was in a unique situation in that I had never trained like to be a runner. I never trained to be, I didn't know anything about training really, you know, so
were you doing any training before you came to us?
Not really. I did the couch to 5K thing. Mm-hmm. So I was out walking and running. Like that whole thing is walk for 90 seconds, run for 60 mm-hmm. or whatever. And so that
is that a program?
Yeah, it's okay. A pretty popular program.
Oh, really? I never heard of that one.
Couch to 5K, yeah.
Me neither.
Most people that do 5Ks mm-hmm. for the first time follow that program.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like an easy thing that you can just do. Okay. So they'll put you out there like 3 or 4 times a week walking with a mix of walking and running mm-hmm. for like 30 minutes, basically.
People can just Google couch to 5K and
yeah.
find that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it gets a little boring. Like I did it for like a month or two and got to my first 5K, but I wasn't following the program anymore. Like I was out there walking one day and I was like, well, I can probably run a little more than 60 seconds.
Sure.
You know, so.
But it got you off the couch?
Yeah. Well, it got me off the couch, but I never broke like 30 minutes in a 5K. Mm-hmm. In fact, I ran the Gibson Guitar 5K back, I guess maybe 2007 or 8, and I was destroyed at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like at the end of it, there's like this hill that comes up from Riverside, and it's like that nasty hill, Bill Street.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know what I'm talking about? It goes under the bridge.
Yeah.
So at the end of that race, I was just completely toast.
Yeah.
Like it was awful, and that probably finished like 30 minutes.
I bet at the end of that race, you would never thought a couple years later you'd be running races over 10 times as long.
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, what's the longest race you've ran now?
50 mile.
50 miler. Mm-hmm. How many kilometers is that compared to a 5K?
How many kilometers? 50K, 670.
70 something. So you're looking at, you know, 14, 15 times as long as your 5K.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
5K is 3 miles.
Okay. Okay.
3.3.
20 times.
5K is 3.1.
I'm not good at math.
Leave me alone. 17 times as long.
10 is 30 miles.
Okay.
So 10 times a 5. Anyway.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Math magic.
It is a long way, Doug. 50 miles is a long
way. It is a long way. We did one marathon distances. One time, and that just destroyed me. I can't imagine running almost twice as long.
Right. Yeah, that took away all my will to do that ever again.
Yeah. So actually, no, I did not start out. I didn't even really want to run. I mean, I was running to try to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
and it just wasn't working. And so that's when I got frustrated and came here. Or to CrossFit Memphis Faction, and started training. Rob Connor kind of pushed me into running. And I was like, I think I might go do a 10K, and he was like, Nah, you're gonna go do a 50K. I was like, What? You're crazy. Who is this guy?
Rob, I like it. Rob's raising nice. Expectations.
And then he's like, Yeah, and then after that, you'll go run a 50-mile race on the beach.
Rob is also the coach that I left for a weekend. I come back and everyone was like, we ran 10K and then we did other stuff for the WOD. I'm like, what?
Right, yeah. Right, I remember that.
People still talk about it. It was like 2 years ago.
Yeah. So anyway, after, I guess it was probably three months or so, I ran my first half marathon, my first 10K, then half marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved up to the marathon. We did St. Jude. We ran my first marathon, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I finished that in 3:50.
Yeah,
which is pretty good for
that's,
your first.
That's a great time for a first time.
That's very respectable.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't break 4 hours.
Yeah, we know.
And how did you feel at the end of that marathon compared to the end of the 5K you were talking about earlier?
Well, I was pretty wasted.
Were you wrecked?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's to be
what does that expected. Mean for you? Like when I said after the marathon, I felt wrecked. Like my feet felt like they got like beat with a hammer. Like they felt terrible. Well, that's what I thought. But people feel all kinds of different.
No, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I was in the gym like the next day.
Oh yeah.
So I was in the, like, you probably don't remember, but you made me come to the gym like the next. You were like, oh, open gym on Sunday. Come.
I had you do like some recovery stuff that was. It wasn't hardcore training. It was
no right.
We worked through full range of motion. I mean, you just did 26 miles of really small range of motion over and over again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's get your hips and everything moving again. Nothing hard, nothing
heavy. No. I was in there. We did the, hit the foam roller.
Or mobility work.
We did some kettlebell swings, and that was it.
Okay.
It
was, you know. All right. So, anyway. So were you sore at all? Or were you, how did your joints feel?
I was a little sore, yeah.
Yeah.
But as the more races I've done, like, for instance, the second 50-miler I did this past April, I felt great.
Yeah.
When I was done, I felt great. And last year, or the first one.
Weird.
I,
the hey, first, fast enough.
That's the first weird. One, the first one I did, you were probably right. I was a wreck at the end of it. I was emotionally wrecked, physically wrecked.
Yeah.
I was coming across the finish line, like almost crying. I was like, I can't believe I just did this. You know? And I didn't think I was going to make it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think I was going to finish that race.
Which race is this?
The first 50-mile race I did.
Oh, okay.
You thought you were going to die?
No, I didn't think I was going to.
I don't think I'm going to make it.
I didn't think I was going to die, but I didn't think I was going to finish the race. I mean,
if you don't make certain checkpoints by a certain time, they tell you you can't go on anymore.
Right. And if you don't finish in 13 hours at this particular race, Wachita.
I felt that way running 400 meter sprints before. I'm not going to make it.
I'm not going to make it. Just leave me here.
Send word to my family.
Anyway, yeah, if you don't finish in 13 hours at this particular race, you don't get the medal. You know, you didn't really finish. So it was important to get under that mark for me anyway. And at the end of it, I wasn't the last person to finish the race, but I was pretty close to the end. And at like there's like random people, but at this time walking through the park on the trail, like a husband and wife and their two kids. And I like come up behind them and I'm like, you're kind of in my way. Could you move so I can finish this race? But so it was that. So I was, you know,
call this recreation,
right? And so, that's right. And so, fast forward a year later,
I run
and,
for fun.
And at the same point, I was strong. I felt good. You know, finished the race really, really strong and ready. You know, coming to the finish line, my son was there. He was running with me. I was like, "I'll beat you." So it was awesome. Like I felt great. I felt strong. And it's like, somebody give me a beer. You know, I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't wait to get back to the gym. So right. I'm not saying I didn't feel it. I mean, I felt bad, but I didn't feel near as bad as I did the year before, so
that's good.
And I was an hour faster, so
an hour faster,
yeah.
Wow,
very nice. But you felt like you could have gone harder. You felt really good, so you probably could have gone a little bit
faster.
I
probably should have gone harder. That's something that I'm trying.
Just learning the pace of a 50 miler, that's got to be pretty difficult to figure out, you know. Yeah. I didn't go over this at the very beginning, so I'll do it now. Obviously, we're gonna be talking about endurance a bit since we have Vaughn as a guest, but we're gonna be talking about endurance nutrition. Low carb for endurance athletes, carb cycling, and then we'll talk about training specifically for endurance, and then how to train for like ultra marathons without getting injured. I guess that's a common thing. Is a lot of people are training and just getting hurt during training, so that's no good. Let's go ahead and roll right into endurance nutrition. We have a pretty strong paleo philosophy. At Faction, and what we promote it pretty heavily. We're not 100% paleo, in that we still our post workout shakes, some of our supplementation is not paleo. So it's whey protein, Gatorade, things like that. So it's not that we just kind of think, oh, paleo is the end all be all, but for the most part, it's really good because it's promoting really high quality meat. High quality protein, high quality carbs, and high quality fats. So it really has nothing to do with, you know, it has everything to do with just finding the best foods and nothing to do with if it fits into the paleo category or not. So
we're not following a cult mentality where we just shut up and do it because like, HQ says it's good.
Well, actually, HQ doesn't.
Okay, well.
They promote the Zen, which nobody does.
That's stupid shit. I'd say why it's stupid. If you're sitting around in your kitchen, like measuring out units of massive amounts of units like strawberries, oh, I need 5 blocks of strawberries. Instead of just eating some strawberries, you're an asshole.
Right? That's a huge mountain of strawberries.
Just eat some strawberries, okay? Is that not enough for you?
I never counted calories or measured my food or anything like that.
No, it should be intuitive enough once you understand some basic philosophy, like filling your plate full of veggies, and if there's a little corner, packing the rest of that full of good meat and some fat, then you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah. So
way too much time thinking about this stuff and way too little time just training.
Yep. I got a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people make that. That's a common mistake, is people overanalyzing training and nutrition and not just doing it. Just go lift the weight. Stop thinking about why you're doing it. Like, that's my job. Your job is to lift the weight. In regard to the lower carb stuff, you do paleo, which is technically lower carb than what most Westerners and what most endurance athletes do. I get a lot of pushback initially from a lot of endurance athletes that come in the gym. They're like, where do you get the carbs from? So you eat low carb pretty much all the time. It's just meat and veggies. Right. Eat some fruit, too, which is a little bit higher in carbohydrate. But then most of your nutrition for carbohydrate intake is happening during and after training.
That's right. So
what do you do for that?
Well, I do take goo during the race. I have a.
What is that, dude?
It's calories, really. I think is the. It's just like
it's like sugar syrup.
Yeah, those little packages of like condensed.
It's
Gatorade
like pudding.
You shove in your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sometimes it's nasty.
And that's during. So you're not doing goo when you go run for an hour.
No,
you're doing
no,
goo. This is race.
Race. Mm-hmm. And if I'm training if I run more than like 13, 15 miles.
Trying not to make goo jokes right now.
Not to make what?
I'm trying not to make goo jokes.
So probably if you're training for longer than 2 hours, that's when you start breaking into that type of stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, you just, I guess you need it. I mean, I don't really know.
So I know it might be important to point out that if you are a recreational runner and you go out for a mile run on Sunday morning, you probably don't need to be eating goo.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
It's like what most people think of Gatorade as, I'm thirsty and I went for a walk, so I'll drink 82 ounces of Gatorade because that's what you do, right?
Right. Well,
and that's not what you do.
No.
Well, this is interesting because you're like, I guess, but every athlete's going to be different. There's some, you sent me an article, some athletes can eat almost no carbohydrate, low carb for a 100-mile race and do really well.
Oh, yeah.
But most people would not. So it's going to be different from person to person, and you're kind of probably still figuring out at what point you actually do need something
So that's where I am now. So I, when I first started running, I never did any of that kind of stuff. Like, I had my workout shake. First marathon, halfway through, you were there to give me a workout shake, and that's what I needed, you know. And I grabbed a goo from like an aid station or something, just because somebody's standing there handing it out.
Yeah, so the shake I gave you is probably a 4-to-1 ratio of carbohydrate to whey protein, and it was Gatorade and whey protein.
Right,
is all it was.
Right,
so it's probably somewhere around 80 grams of carbs and 20 grams of protein, and that probably made you feel like $1 million.
Right,
halfway
so
through.
Really, I mean. I get to that point where, God, I feel like crap. I should eat something, you know? So now I know when that's going to be coming. Like, so I know that like 8-9 miles, I should have eaten something,
mm-hmm.
be it a goo or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something. I should have eaten some food. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So now I know, like, my legs are about to start cramping. I should have eaten an S-cap or had some Gatorade.
What is that?
S-cap.
It's like a sodium pill.
Sodium pill?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is really interesting. I mean, this is something that you can only figure out through experience. I'm sure you've talked to other people and kind of find out when they do certain things.
Right.
And obviously you're going to respond. And do you find that you respond differently if the temperature is different? Like, if it's dead heat in summer, is it different than like running in the winter? Or
I don't usually run in the summer.
Okay.
This year I went on a run in June at Shelby Forest, and it was horrible. And I swore,
that makes sense.
I'm never going to do this again.
Based on my personal experience and empirical analyses, yes, it sucks to run in summer.
I get bit by a horse fly, and my leg swelled up, and it was awful.
Oh, man.
And I'm not going to do that again.
Okay. What do you do for when you say you come in the gym and you do just CrossFit, or you're doing the program I gave you, you drink post-workout shake. What's that look like?
Yeah, it's a scoop away. I guess it's probably 35 grams of protein and very small amount of Gatorade.
Okay.
I think, I don't know the exact grams, but
like half a scoop, like one or to one, a third of a scoop,
by about one to one,
third of a scoop, maybe.
And then during your run training, you do more Gatorade or about the same?
About the same.
Okay. Yeah, and to note, the majority of his run training is extremely short duration, like 200s and 400s.
Yep.
So, and one long run on the weekend where you might be actually taking goo in on top of workout shakes and stuff.
If it's a long run.
If it's a long run.
If it's like 15 or 20 miles, which I don't get to do that very much, but.
Vaughn always wants to run more than I want him to run.
Yeah.
So what's an example of the intervals you just talked about, the 200s and 400s?
I'll have him run, say, 8 200s with a 1 minute break in between each 200. Who's that? Oh, that's our time. And then 400s, he'll maybe run like between four and eight 400s with a 2 to 3 minute break in between each one.
Right. But these are on the same day that I'm also training.
Right.
Training in the morning, and then I'll do these after or in the evening or something.
Mm-hmm. So Vaughn's training program looks like he always has a strength component, some kind of speed component, and this is in the gym, a strength, speed, and then some kind of conditioning component.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's very CrossFit-ish, not all of it. And then later on that day, so he does that 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, he'll go in the afternoons and run some really fast sprints. And then one day on the weekend, he'll do a long run, and that could be anywhere between 5K and 20 miles.
Okay. So for the day, like the 5 day week program where he does the speed work, strength work, and all the other stuff you mentioned, you want to give again an example of that?
Sure. Right now we're really focused on strength. So he's doing more squatting. Like, I'll have him squat before he does any kind of Olympic lift. An Olympic lift would be kind of like the speed power type stuff. So, he's getting a lot of speed work on the track also, just to note that. So he might be doing power cleans or snatches or something like that. So he'll do a squat or a press or something like that first. Then he'll do an Olympic lift. And we've kind of been playing around. I've been playing a little bit around with doing Olympic lifts, say every minute on the minute. So something kind of a density training type approach on the Olympic lifts. And then,
so like 70% for a double every minute on the minute for 10 minutes.
So 70% would be like, you would do like a triple at 70% every minute on the minute for eight to 10 minutes.
Okay.
So stuff like that. So stuff that's, he's not going to reach like high peak power, but it's going to be close enough. So mostly working on, you know, speed and repetitive speed. So something that's going to be good for if he's running up a hill. So those squats and those Olympic lifts are going to help him to be faster at the end of the race, be faster up hills. He's noted many times that he'll hit a hill and everyone starts walking and he's like kind of trotting past them, which is nice.
And I'll say, you should be squatting.
Yeah, I attribute that to his strength. You know, that's definitely not an endurance issue. He has more capacity for putting out more power.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably has a little bit of nutrition as well. He does a little bit of conditioning, and that's usually just to build up a lot of muscular endurance so that make him more durable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we approach training 5 days a week. And then he only runs 3 days a week. And two of those days that he's running, it's only 200s and 400s.
Mm-hmm.
He's running like 1 mile of training on those 2 days. So he's running 2 miles of sprints a week, and then he might only run a 5K that weekend. So, I mean, compared to other ultramarathoners, that's really low volume.
So your total,
super low volume.
Your total road work is really, really, really incredibly small compared to just about anybody else who is training for any sort of race.
Yeah, and I noted last year, at the end of the year, like in December, end of December, all my running friends were posting on Facebook about, well, I got to 2,013 miles this year or whatever. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. Maybe I should calculate how many miles I ran. So I started thinking about it. And number one, I can remember every run that I did, right? The whole year.
Anything that wasn't a sprint. You're talking about like
anything that wasn't a sprint.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I calculated up, and this includes a marathon, a 50K, and a 50 miler, and I only ran like 250 miles.
So you ran like 10% of what these other guys were running.
Right.
So it's that is pretty strong evidence that you don't have to put in multiple thousands of miles a year in order to be able to do well at an ultra marathon type competition. I mean, you would think that you'd have to at least practice more to do that. And this is clearly a case where that's completely not necessary.
Right.
Is it 100% optimal? I don't know, but considering your very well balanced set of adaptations, your ability to also, you know, deadlift a lot of weight. Where,
right.
How many other people running 2,000 miles a year could deadlift even 300 pounds? I wonder if there's even any of them.
Very few. I mean, I don't care about winning the race. I don't really care that much about how fast it is or how fast I finish the race. But I find that I am competitive in my age group. Like, I'm not going to win my age group, but I have been in races where I'm
in all fairness, it's not necessarily, you're also running against people who are really good runners because these aren't like small scale races and there are not a ton of these competitions around the country, I would guess. So if you're a really talented runner, so like going to a national level weightlifting competition, you're going to run into guys who are just really good runners. Mm-hmm. So there's no shame in not winning, of course. But if you can also not train like them and also give up the skill to them and still do really well, that's saying quite a lot about your approach to training.
Right.
And I think that's really awesome.
And I'm not getting injured, which is a big deal.
No, that was one of the things that people,
it's almost like if you went to, sorry to jump into, but it's almost like you went to USA Nationals, USAW Nationals, and you told people, well, yeah, I trained for this by running. And I've lifted, maybe 1,000 pounds this year total. And I placed five out of seven people or whatever. That'd be really amazing.
Right.
Well, that'd be shockingly amazing. It's kind of what you're doing with running.
Well, I don't know that I placed that high.
Well, as an example.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell people about that. You ran a 50K and then you ran a 50 miler last year. And you had you had logged 7 miles of running in between the two races. And they were like 2 months apart.
Right. Yeah.
Tell that real quick. It's amazing.
So we kind of made a big deal about that. James was with me on the race. And so he was telling everybody that he encountered. He was like, hey, you see that guy? He only ran 7 miles between, this is like February to April. So the 50K was in February, 50 miler in April. And I did a 7 mile run.
You ran one time.
Once. I ran.
You ran once in like 2 or 3 months?
I ran once.
To prep for a 50 mile race?
Once. I had set out to do more, but I was not feeling well. I was at Tour de Wolf, and like I got through 7 miles and I just felt like crap. I said, screw it, I'm going home. I don't feel like doing this. And I went home and that was the only run I ended up doing. And so the race director at the end of the race.
So it wasn't even a good one. It was a completely shitty training
session.
It was
horrible. And the race director came over and she was like, I do not recommend anybody running only 7 miles to do this. And I suggest before next year, you add some mileage to your training.
Shut up.
Whatever.
Shut your face.
Wait, that was the one you made the little documentary off of?
Yeah.
A little documentary preview?
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yeah, I love that video, dude. If I'm ever just kind of like, I don't know, kind of down about going out and training, like I need to like pump myself up a little bit, I can watch that video and be like, fuck yeah, I'm going to go train right now.
Oh, yeah. I watch it like once a day.
Do you?
All the 1,500 views, they're all me.
It was a cool video. CTP, James did a good job with it.
Post some sort of link to that.
Yeah, well, we could probably edit some of that in.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break real quick, and we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about nutrition. We'll talk about carb cycling specifically. And then I think we kind of already touched on training for an ultra without injury, but we can get a little more into that, I guess.
All right.
He posted, it was late the other night.
Yeah.
He posted on Twitter, like, was I the only kid in like the early 90s that was wearing JNCOs? And I was like, oh, yeah, I had a pair.
It was all about some JNCOs back in the day.
And he goes, and he tweeted back, he was like, do you have any pictures? And I was like, no, I burned those. I had a pair, but I burned those pictures. They'll probably resurface if I run for office ever. Run for office? Pictures of JNCOs coming out. He wore JNCOs. Oh, we can't vote for him.
Yeah, right. Everybody vote for you. They'd be like, that's what I did. He's just like me.
Only the cool people.
He understands my needs.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about... actually, I want Doug to go into, because he has a really excellent explanation of the different types of carbohydrates and how they react in your body. Whoa. And yeah. So
put me on the spot. I wasn't prepared for this.
That's how you perform best, when I put you on the spot. That's what I heard.
I think it's the other way around.
It's the other way around. You're supposed to put me on the spot.
You don't like to rehearse things.
I hate rehearsal.
You get all flustered when you have to rehearse things. What are you going to say, Mike? I don't know. Just turn the camera on.
Do that. All right. So,
okay. We can talk about that.
Yeah. I want to talk about that before we get into carb cycling. And then I'll kind of, we've already talked about carbohydrates during races and stuff like that. So I just kind of want it. People kind of think about carbs, and they hear carbs and think rice, bread, pasta. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk a little bit about the type of carbs you might want to eat during, you know, pre, during, and post-workout and training and stuff like that.
Okay. If you're trying to stay paleo, you have your kind of well-sided, clean types of carbohydrates, your sweet potatoes and your quinoa. You know, you're trying to avoid, you know, the... either regular potatoes, which really aren't too bad if you're just trying to get carbs or calories for your race, but you're trying to avoid, you know, breads and pastas and rices and things like that. But during the actual race or during your training program, you know, it's hard to actually be eating things. So obviously, you want some type of drink. And as far as the carbohydrates you put in your drink, you have a couple of options. The easiest option is probably just regular old Gatorade. And the breakdown down of sugars in Gatorade, I'm not 100% sure exactly how it breaks down percentage-wise, but it's got a little bit of glucose, a little bit of sucrose, which is a combination of glucose and fructose. Fructose, people talk about being, you know, not the best thing to get, you know, a huge volume of. So, you know, if you're trying to stay super paleo and avoid fructose, then maybe Gatorade isn't the best solution for you.
Why would people want to avoid fructose? What's the danger of consuming too much fructose or too frequently?
Well, there's a lot of disease talk there, but as far as performance goes, fructose doesn't get stored as glycogen, as energy, in your muscles the same way that glucose does. It'll go get stored in your liver first, and then it'll have to get converted to glycogen in your liver, and then it'll re-break back down into glucose, put back into circulation, and then it could be stored in your muscles. So it's kind of a roundabout process. So if you can get glucose straight in your bloodstream and then straight in your muscles, you'll recover a little bit better, and you'll have that energy available a little bit sooner. So if you can get more pure glucose during the race, I'm not sure what's in goo 100%. Do you know what's in goo as far as sugars go? Yeah. But if you get more either...
Not even trying, dude.
More pure glucose, it'll have a quicker reaction in your body. You can use that fuel sooner. So for that, you could just buy pure glucose and put it in your drink. It's not quite as sweet as fructose, so it probably won't be, you know, probably won't taste quite as good.
Right.
Or you could get some type of starch. You know, waxy maize starch is just amylopectin, which is a very fast digesting type of starch. That's a good option too. Or you could get maltodextrin, which is similar to starch, but the glucose molecules aren't bound together as tightly, and so right when it gets in your stomach, it kind of just breaks down right into pure glucose right away. So the glycemic index of that is really, really high. But, you know, kind of in the end, all those things are pure glucose, and they're all good options. So pure glucose, waxy maize starch, or maltodextrin are all easy options, because they're all kind of the same thing. They're all kind of just glucose in the end. Is that kind of what you're looking for?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the reasons we suggest Gatorade a lot of times for post-workouts, it does have a combination of the types of sugars that they're going to break down at the speed that's most desired. People with Gatorade kind of figured it out, I think, is what we decided a long time ago. I think we looked it up a long time ago and was like, okay, Gatorade's good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough, and it's cheap. You can find it everywhere. You know, if you want to get maltodextrin or waxy maize, you got to seek it out a little more than just going to buy Gatorade, which you can buy anywhere. And Gatorade tastes good, and it's got electrolytes in it also. And he was talking about...
I used to get it
unlike
from,
the water from the toilet.
I can't say the word electrolytes without thinking of Brando.
I used to get maltodextrin from a beer, a brew-your-own-beer supply website. I forget the name of it. But you get a giant container of it for far less than if you tried to go to a sports supplement company, obviously.
So maltodextrin and glucose is in Roctane goo, which is what I take.
Oh, okay.
That's really good then.
actually, maltodextrin is kind of an interesting thing because it's just glucose molecules, hydrogen bonded together, which is like a very weak bond. Like I said, once you eat it, it just basically falls apart in your stomach. They can market it as a complex carbohydrate. And so you'll look at like a lot of weight gainers. It'll say like only 5 grams of sugar. And then you look at the...
It's all sugar.
And you look at the actual ingredients and say carbohydrates, 106 per serving, and then 5 grams of sugar and salt maltodextrin, which is a super fast digesting, technically complex carbohydrate, which is kind of a garbage term anymore because nobody really cares if it's a complex carbohydrate or a sugar. They're all similar enough where they give you a similar, especially insulin reaction in your body. So it's kind of a garbage term anymore, but it still markets very well. And so they can use maltodextrin, which is basically just pure sugar, and market it as not sugar.
It's funny you bring that up because I don't even think about like complex carbs versus simple carbs at all anymore. No. Like it's kind of like I just like pushed it to the back of my brain.
It's just carbs.
Yeah. And so I'll be talking to people about nutrition, and they'll go, well, I'm doing good because I'm eating complex carbs. And I go... Like I'm like, what are complex? Like, what foods fall in that category for me? Like, I used to know and I used to care, and like, I just don't. It just doesn't matter.
It's not relevant so much anymore.
That I just totally don't even think about it anymore. So people start talking about like, is it simple or complex carb? I go, well, why?
Like, who cares? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's interesting. So
it reminds me of Suzanne Summers. Yeah, I'm gonna say this. I remember who Suzanne Summers, right, from the Three's Company. Mm. I remember she was on TV one time selling a nutritional book. Obviously ridiculous, but she said that the key to my diet. This is Suzanne Summers speaking. The key to my
actress,
diet,
not nutritionist.
Yeah, the key to my diet is that you don't want to eat anything that turns to sugar in your body because sugar makes you fat. Like, oh, you don't want to eat anything that turns to sugar in your body. That's a short list of things, I guess.
Good advice, I guess. What was she suggesting after that? She's like,
eat potatoes and stuff because they're blah, blah, blah. It went on that line of thinking.
All right.
That's what I was thinking you were saying.
So for the record, the complex carbohydrates are just sugars all linked together, and they get cleaved off the end one by one and then just turned back into
I think her angle is more like, you don't want sugar in your body, period. And I started thinking, well, you have to have sugar in your body because you're going to die. Your brain's not going to work and all this kind of stuff. But interesting stuff, Suzanne.
Maybe not.
But technically, you can run on ketones, so you don't have to have sugar. Yeah, anyways.
You have essential fats and essential proteins. And if you don't have those, then you'll die. But there's no essential carbohydrates. You can go carb-free forever, and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Might not feel great, but you won't die.
Man. I was going to ask you something.
Think hard.
I have a question.
Right there.
Sure.
Go on.
Is there a difference between, like, I heard of a couple of years ago during the faction games, I saw a purple sweet potato for the first time.
Yeah.
And somebody was saying, well, this is way better than eating a regular sweet potato or a potato. I mean, is there really,
flavor?
Not flavor.
I know they're delicious.
As far as like,
they are good.
As far as the carbohydrate content goes, I really have no idea on the difference between purple and orange sweet potatoes. You know, there probably is some difference. I mean, something's coloring the vegetable.
I guess there's a
difference there.
I think maybe the lack of maybe it doesn't have as much beta carotene. Or maybe they're concerned they're getting too much of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just a shot in the dark.
I mean, you're right. Beta carotene is a pigment, and it will turn things orange, and something else is turning it purple. So maybe it just has way more of something else turning it purple or none of that and whatever else is making it orange. So there's a difference there, but it's probably more like a phytochemical type difference and not necessarily a carbohydrate difference. I'm guessing. I really don't know.
I was wanting to bring up, you were talking about how a lot of the complex carbs won't be classified as sugars on a food label.
Mm-hmm.
As I was just wanting you to kind of point it out that just because it doesn't say sugar on there doesn't mean that it's not going to turn into sugar. Like it's immediately... Like those carbohydrates might be listed as non-sugar carbohydrates, but as soon as you ingest it, it's sugar. I think that's obvious to most people listening. But.
Yeah, I really don't think about carbs being, again, like, you know, good carbs being complex or starchy, and sugars being single molecules being any worse for you. Like how I define good carbs versus bad carbs is, you know, I think of the carbohydrates kind of essentially being the same for the most part, which is kind of a generalization. It's not 100% true every time, but the carbohydrates are roughly the same, and what makes it a good carb or a bad carb is what comes along with those carbohydrates. So if it's a very natural source, we're talking about the sweet potatoes, there's other vitamins, minerals, enzymes, anti-cancer, antiviral nutrients, like things that can help your immune system and ward off disease. And there's all these other things that come along with it. When you get a processed carbohydrate, they get filtered out or changed or destroyed by heat treating and processing and milling and all these other things that happen to process carbohydrates. So you're left with pure carbs in a lot of cases, like if you're looking at, you know, regular white sugar, but you don't have any nutrients at all to come along with it. So that's what really makes a good carb or a bad carb for the most part, in my opinion. And granted, there's still a difference between glucose and fructose and things like that. But I think first and foremost, you need to think about, are you getting anything positive coming along with it? Because all those other micronutrients are actually what helps you in your body process those nutrients and store that, you know, in your muscles or somewhere that where it's needed, and not just being like, well, we don't have all the micronutrients that process these additional calories, and so we'll just store them until we have those nutrients for later. And then you basically just put them into storage, which means you're storing those body fat.
So going to a question that Brad submitted to me, he's talking about carb cycling works really well for him. Maybe go into what carb cycling, like a really quick explanation, and talk about like how all that applies to carb cycling, how you would carb cycle in a clean manner.
Yeah, there's a lot of different theories on how you should carb cycle. How I tend to carb cycle is, similar to what Vaughn was saying earlier about just having a workout drink. So I eat paleo pretty much all the time. And then the days where I train, you know, I have a workout drink. So I had extra carbs that day because I had carbohydrates in my workout drink. And if I trained twice that day, then I had two workout drinks that day. And so I had even extra carbs on that day. So by having a workout drink, you're kind of automatically carb cycling because you're getting more carbohydrates the more you train. And if you don't train that day, then you ate paleo all day. So if you ate meat and vegetables all day and didn't have any dense source of carbohydrates, then that was your low carb day. So I think that's the easiest way to carb cycle kind of naturally without being like, you know, on Monday I'm going to have a high carb day and Tuesday is going to be a medium carb day and Wednesday I'm going to have a no carb day and Thursday I'm going to have a medium carb day again. And
you, then, like, you get caught in the trap of thinking too much about when you're going to manipulate what, and you lose sight of the reason you were going to carb cycle to begin with, right? To support the level of activity you were going to do that day. So that's probably a brilliant example of a more intuitive, more effective way to approach a problem like that. What's the most simple way you could think about it? Well, I'll eat more carbs when I need them. All the other theories are necessary.
Yeah, there's no reason to be on a high carb day on the day that you're primarily sedentary.
And if you are, you're thinking about, I'm going to manipulate things based on some hunch I have versus just following what you likely will need. The rationale is completely different and probably much more effective if you just do that simple path.
Yeah, you tend to tolerate carbohydrates a lot more effectively right after training. So as far as studies go, they'll look at two groups of people, say there's 100 people in each group, and they take one group and they train, and then they have a carb protein drink right after they train, like 0 minutes post-workout. And they take the other group, they do the same training session, and then they wait 2 hours, and then they have the exact same workout drink or post-workout drink. And then the rest of the day, they're on the same diet roughly. So they're on isocaloric diets, which means they're having the same number of calories throughout the day and the same number of calories post-workout. But the only difference is that one group had it 0 minutes post-workout and the other group had it 2 hours post-workout. And the group that had it 0 minutes post-workout tends to store more carbohydrates in their muscles. They'll take muscle biopsies and they'll measure the amount of muscle glycogen in the muscle. They'll have more in the 0 minutes post-workout group, more storage in the muscle than the other group that waited 2 hours. Even on the same number of calories, they're getting more faster, more efficient recovery. And kind of the assumption there is, well, if you're not taking those calories and storing them where needed, which would be your muscle glycogen, then you know there's plenty of other places in your body that you use carbohydrates. You know, all your cells can benefit from having at least a little bit. But the assumption there is, well, if it didn't go to the muscle, then you're storing it as body fat for later. So there's a nutrient partitioning benefit to having carbohydrates very close to your workout, and the rest of the day you just don't tolerate them and use them as effectively. You're more likely to get fat if you're having your carbohydrates at other times of the day.
Exactly what I wanted to hear. awesome. I think everyone out there in iTunes land has been informed. I think it's great. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. I want to let Vaughn have the last topic. And just training for ultras. Someone submitted a question about training for ultras without injury, and I think we kind of covered that and how we program for you.
Don't run.
Mm-hmm. But I want you to tell us why you think that you stay injury free quite a bit compared to other runners.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one, because I don't run as much, and you know, in particular, the people that are asking this question on Facebook, I know they run too much, right? They're trying to go to all the weekly group runs and train CrossFit on the same day. You know, come in the next morning, I just ran 15 miles last night. Well, you should have stayed home. You know, I mean, or stop running. So
they'll do 15 miles multiple days a week.
Right. 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 And then wonder why am I so drained? Why can't I train properly at the gym? And why does my knee hurt? Why does my ankle hurt? You know, and then they end up out for 3-4 days because their leg, their knees messed up or whatever it is, and they're just running too much. Yeah. In my opinion. What was the second thing? There were two things I said. The second thing is technique, right? So we spent a lot of time on pose running in the very beginning when I first started training with you guys, and yeah. I think that helped me immensely. Because I'm not like the best pose runner during the race, you know, but I think that foundation has switched me from heel striking into a more forefront landing to where I don't have those heel injuries. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and I can't walk because my heel hurts so bad and that right. kind of thing. So,
yeah, not even just your heel, but if you're heel striking, you're putting a lot more, negative forces on your knee and your hip and your right. lower back and I mean everything really.
Right. So mm-hmm. so yeah, don't run so much and look into pose running because those two things are going to be huge for you.
Something you brought up I thought was really interesting was it's like they're doing CrossFit and mm-hmm. then they're going off and doing someone else's running program.
Right.
What we offer is comprehensive programming. And if you do this with anybody, it's not just us. You take any two different training programs and you're just going to put them together arbitrarily. That's not smart.
Right.
Like, you just, I know people who like will blend like CrossFit football with CrossFit endurance or something. Like, I'm like, no.
Do one
program that there is a rationale behind the program comprehensively. Like, yeah. you can't just take random things and throw it together. I know it sounds like, I don't know. I guess some people think that sounds good. Like, let's just throw random programs together and see what happens.
Well, it's hard for people that have been running for so long. You just can't get it out of their brain that they don't need to run all those miles. You know, so it's really hard for them to come into an environment like we have and give that up. You know, right. like just stop doing it. Just stop.
Yeah.
I remember talking to a guy who had been, you know, a long time endurance athlete. He's probably in his late 40s or maybe 50s now, and we were suggesting to him that he can cut his volume down, and he took it as, hey, old man, that stuff doesn't work. And he's like, no, like I've seen it work for so many people for 20 or 30 years. Like, you know, you can't tell me it doesn't work. I've seen it work so many times. And after I kind of having that realization, like he felt like I was telling him everything he knows is totally wrong. I came back and I said, we're not saying that what they do with super high volume training doesn't work at all, right. because a lot of people have had success with it. What we're saying is that you don't necessarily have to do that. And if you take this lower volume approach, you can still train to have that capacity. You can train to work on your speed, which is very important because usually running faster gives you a bigger range of motion and you're potentially training different fiber types in a lot of cases. So the training of intervals affects your body in a lot different way than just training the same pace all the time and trying to run longer and longer and longer with it. And then in addition, what we're talking about today was having low volume training keeps you from being injury free. Mm-hmm. So we're saying you can train for that capacity without having as high of a risk potential. And then when you're 45, you don't have to have both knees replaced.
Right.
which a lot of those guys that, you know, you hear about those guys that ran a marathon every day for, you know, for 2 years, and then they got nasty problems when they're older. So especially for those of us that, that our sole goal in life isn't to, you know, win this one race I'm preparing for 2 years from now. And we're trying to race and have a good time with it and, you know, enjoy yourself in, along the way without only focusing on winning and then having a life afterward. I think the lower volume approach is a smarter way to go about it.
Yeah. And I also get the benefit of being able to stay strong and get stronger, which is huge for me because I really have come to like that. So running all those miles.
The strength is awesome.
Right. No doubt.
It's fun to be strong.
Yeah.
It is.
For sure. All right, guys. I think that's about it. I didn't leave anything out.
I'm going to plug my website.
No doubt.
LiftHeavyRunLong.com.
LiftHeavyRunLong.com.
That's right.
It should be LiftHeavyRunLong sometimes, probably like not very often, but sometimes.com.
Yeah. So if you want to see how Vaughn trains, it's basically the program we were just talking about on the show. If you go to that website, you'll be able to see what he's doing. He doesn't just post his training. He also posts, you know,
Race reports and whatever comes.
Yeah, what all do you post there?
Well, I've got an athletes page, which I'm trying to put together of, you know, runners who can also who can finish a 50-mile race and deadlift 400-plus pounds. So that's just some goal that I came up with.
Do you scale that for women? Do you have like a women's group that can deadlift 250 or something?
I've been asked that question, but I haven't come across any women that want to be on the page. So if there is a woman out there that wants to be included on that page, we can definitely scale that. I'll probably get Mike to help me figure out the weights and on that or something. Like what's the women's equivalent of a 400 pound deadlift?
It usually, I mean, the standard like CrossFit deal is like 70%.
Okay.
So
anyway, come to that website and follow me on my journey to be the fastest and strongest distance runner in the world.
Very good.
Very cool.
Got anything, Doug?
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't been watching all the, you know, technique wads from the very beginning before we started editing them into the show, be sure to go to the technique wad tab at the top of fitter.tv and start going through the kind of the backlogged older technique wads where we talk about weightlifting and squatting and deadlifting and you know, all the stuff that we haven't really talked about a whole lot on that page lately. That way you can be up to speed for all the episodes in the future. Mike?
Yeah.
Chris Moore blog.
Nice plug, dude.
Oh, yeah, the Chris Moore blog, where you can see all the nice infographics, right?
Yeah, thechrismooreblog.com. A nice mix of things that I know and things that occur to me. I put them up there. You can read them and consider them.
I enjoy your blog.
I do, too.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
make sure to go to FITR.TV. Already kind of talked about that earlier in the show.
FITR.TV.
.TV. If you can't
pronounce
it.
Fitter. Get it?
Anyways, make sure to check that out. Am I forgetting anything, Doug?
Yeah, if you're on Fitter.TV, be sure to sign up for the newsletters off the right side of the screen. You know, put your name and your email in. That way you'll stay up to date with all the new things that we're offering. We have new shows come out, whether it's Barbell Shrug or Technique Wad or new products. You know, we send out an email and let y'all know about that. That way you can stay up to speed with everything that we're doing.
And give us your feedback.
Awesome. Yeah, that's something I forgot to put on the front of the show.
Damn. Give us your feedback. Damn. Ask us questions. And we'll do our best to make sure you are kept up to speed.
I really do think that makes the show better because the last few shows we've gotten questions, and I think that helped develop the show into something that people actually want to hear. So what are you looking at? Get off the nuts. All right. See y'all next time.
Thanks, guys.
My nuts.